Welcome, everyone. My name is Chris Field, and today I'm talking to Jeremy C, who is Senior Manager for Commercial Marketing Asia Pacific for Sensormatic. Now, Jeremy is not going to be talking about Sensormatic or its products or its services. I've invited him on because he has spent 10 years in region and focuses entirely on the retail industry, and he has some fascinating insights which are going to bust many of the myths that we have about the state of global retailing, which is so often based on what is happening in the US and Europe. So listen in, and I think you're going to learn an enormous amount.
Jeremy, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Chris. I'm good. It's 3 in the afternoon here, but I understand you're in the morning. So good morning to you.
Yeah, so just for the benefit of our listeners, I'm in the UK and Jeremy is in Singapore, am I right?
Yes, that's right, Singapore.
If any of you have ever seen Jeremy C's LinkedIn posts, found those very instructive. When we talk about in Europe and indeed in the US, when we talk about retail, it tends to be very US-centric. And I frequently have analysts in the US and kind of so-called experts telling me about the future of retailing. That's all very well, but in truth, it's a little bit like the World Series for baseball, right? The assumption is it's exactly the same, you know, everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to get you on this podcast, because you have quite a different perspective. So I'd like to start there.
In my current job, I look at, you know, more physical stores in Asia Pacific. But I myself have spent close to a decade about living and working in China from the time of 2004 to the end of 2013. So that was really kind of the time frame whereby China really boomed. They were talking about 8% GDP growth every year, 2004, 2014. And that was also the period of time that there was a lot of changes, a huge boom in retail as well as the economic growth. So some of the things I say probably tend to be a little bit skewed towards China because I do have my interest there as well. And of course, I've spoken to you on this before. I do believe that China in certain aspects is leading retail. I'm going to talk a little bit about how different Asia is in terms of retail versus in the States. Let's go back to the basics on how actually in most part of Asia it's like, especially in big cities like Tokyo, Shanghai, Hong Kong, these kind of places. In Asia, there is actually pretty high population density. You know, we're going to pack close to 60% of the world's population in just limited geographies, minusing off your hilly areas and land that you can't use. So a lot of us in Asia, in big cities especially, live in really small places. We have a little empty space in the sky, pigeonholes, own what's on our feet. So a lot of things are very close in proximity as well. So that's essentially very different from the US or maybe even parts of Europe. Most of it is quite open spaces, large areas to cover. And that itself has some implications on retail, how we shop, how we buy things, right? Because we're all so packed together, it's quite different for most of us in Asia. A lot of things are easily within reach. So we don't do that kind of a weekly grocery run whereby we take one truckload of food and groceries, we pack them for the whole week, we drive back home and then keep them in freezers, and then we do it again the next week. So for Asia, and also because the way we value cooking and food, right, we tend to want to have freshness in the things that we buy. So we do more of retail and shopping on a probably more regular basis in terms of, you know, groceries and essentials rather than our Western counterparts. So high population density, that's what I would say, you know, one kind of feature. And also we have small spaces, so we don't have no space for massive freezers to keep our food. And also because of all this, and of course, in certain economies, like in Singapore, cars are really expensive. So we don't really have that luxury to have cars to shop around and load our things in them. So all this play into a part whereby a lot of consumers and a lot of retail is built around this convenience for consumers in terms of distance and time and space. So what you see actually, which is quite common in most part of Asia, you see a lot of convenience stores, right? Small shops. And more developed cities, you really have bigger supermarkets in places like India and China, there'll be like hypermarkets. Singapore, not that many. So there is a huge range of different formats of stores in Asia. While in the US, probably, you know, based on those places I've been to, of course, you know, in places like New York will be quite similar to most of the cities in Asia.
Yes.
There's this saying, right, you don't really conquer Asia if you have not conquered China, right? And but that's kind of trying to put China the same shoes as the rest of Asia, which in fact kind of comparison should never be there. China is a huge market, so all these international brands will be there. And of course, there are also, you know, up and coming local brands. In fact, I feel based on my time in China, there has been a shift in perception of foreign brands and local brands in general, in retail as well, I guess. And the shift has already is really more towards, you know, support for the local brand, maybe not so much for the foreign brands. Of course, in terms of more sophisticated and luxury brands, there still be a tendency to for the Chinese consumer to want to get their Gucci's and Chanel's, you know, versus, I don't know what's the Chinese equivalent brand for all these luxury goods.
I've tried to point out over in Europe that, yes, the global luxury brands are still dominant, and in fact, they are continuing to find growth. But there are the local brands, but the Chinese catch up quickly, right?
Yes, Chinese catch up quickly, but, you know, there's still this perception, right, that branded luxury brands overseas are still, for lack of a better way to describe it, far more sophisticated or superior to local Chinese brand, because China's economic development and it is growing middle class, they want to have these brands, that they want to hold these brands, and, you know, that people aspire to have. And it's kind of like a, you know, extension of their image and how and their social status. So it's that kind of an impression that that they still tend to want to get all these luxury brands, overseas luxury brands, as opposed to Chinese brands, because they don't have that same heritage and perception of sophistication behind them yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I read something recently. Did you catch this story? It was in Hermes, you know, the French brand.
Yeah, yes.
It made $2.7 million in one day after it reopened. So we've over here about this concept of revenge shopping. In other words, the minute people manage to get out of a lockdown, they're just going to go shopping.
It's funny you pointed it also out, because I actually saw the article and I shared it on LinkedIn last evening. And all of a sudden, there were a lot of people sharing it as well. And I think within 3 hours, I got like 1,500 something views on it. And I remember my post was done in a multiple choice question format, right? Based on the article below on Hermes making 2.7 million in a day. This happened because, is it number one, revenge buying? Number two, life is short, you know, with this virus situation. People want to spend whatever money they have. Or number three, that the pockets are deep in China. Or number four, all of the above. So that was my perspective on that. And I really do think it's all of the above, because they're all true. They're all true. I think they're all true. And I think this entire virus situation, lockdown situation, has made us realize a few things, right? That physical stores do matter. Why? Because humans crave physical interaction. Really, right? Don't you? You know, you must have realized that by now, having been locked down on 5 to 6 weeks.
No, absolutely. I think the view here is that, yes, the store has been on a pretty rocky journey over the last kind of 5 to 10 years with the rise of online, but that there is clearly a role, okay, a very different role for the store. But again, I want to get your perspective, because what we're dealing with in Europe and the US for slightly different reasons, that retailers are thinking to themselves, well, if I've got 1,000 stores, maybe I only need 600, maybe I only need 200. So there's a lot of that going on. There's a continued rationalization of the store estate. And clearly at the moment, with most of them closed, I think the prediction that on the other side of this crisis, whenever the lockdowns are lifted, that it will give retailers, it's given them the breathing space to continue, if you like, to think about how many stores they might actually need in the longer term. And the reason I wanted your perspective on is because you've talked to me about the kind of growth rate of stores in some of the countries that we've been talking about. You mentioned, mm-hmm. I think it was Malaysia, the sheer yeah. number of shopping malls. So just want to get your perspective rather than us all calling the end of the store as we know it.
I think bringing back to the question that you first asked me, you know, let's touch back on that later. But going back to, you know, you were asking me on the different examples in Asia that's different in the US, you know, for example, right? I can't think of a better example than, you know, Alibaba. Everybody knows Alibaba, right? So the coin, the term that was coined in terms of new retail, how summarized in a way, how clicks meet bricks, you know, with the middle layer of logistics and all this seamless payment and all this shopping from your handphone, and you can track everything you want to track. You can pay from your mobile phone. You can even know the origin of the vegetable that you ordered at the Hema stores. I think that is a great example of how different in Asia. One example, how different retail is in Asia, because Alibaba is really the shining star in Asia in terms of innovation in retail. Okay, I think that's been said enough. I think you all have seen all the different videos of their stores and all that. But maybe I want to shine the light as well on a similar setup, maybe in Indonesia, right? There are also a few e-commerce companies that are, you know, really doing something different there. There'll be two examples that I think of. They're called Tokopedia and Bukalapak. There are e-commerce platforms whereby, similar to Alibaba, they also do, they started with online, and then now they are going offline as well. Because earlier when I mentioned how different Asia is in terms of the sheer number of stores, convenience stores and small shops and all that, just in Indonesia itself, right, there are millions of what they call the warung. I hope I pronounced that correct. Warungs are really small, traditional mom and pop shops scattered all around Indonesia. Indonesia is huge, spans across a large area because there's just so many islands, and there are millions of these stores. And one of these operators, the one that's called Bukalapak, they actually are working with about 700,000 of these small mom and pop shops to bring them online. So you don't see these kind of trends in US because US is not built out in such a way whereby there are so many small stores. And granting these small stores an online component, helping them go online, suddenly, you know, the entire e-commerce marketplace just explodes. And for them,
this is an e-commerce company using essentially an existing infrastructure. It's not about their mobile stores necessarily. They're saying, well, look, what's out there that's going to allow me to distribute my goods most cost effectively? And I guess, therefore, that is a new revenue stream for all of those smaller retailers.
Yes, yes. They started online and then they went on offline. So it's more of a win-win situation. And Alibaba did something similar as well with the smaller mom and pop shops within China. They also helped, you know, bring them online. And suddenly you see this win-win situation for both online and offline. So I would be the first to disagree that physical stores don't have a place anywhere, that online is taking over. Yes, online is growing. The numbers are astronomical. But there will always be a place for physical stores, like I always advocate. And, you know, if we go back to the Hermes example in China, revenge buying and all that, we really need to acknowledge that China is a force to reckon with if we want to look at the luxury market. So I did a bit of research. I did come upon this report before by McKinsey. I think they do this once every year. It's called the McKinsey China Luxury Report. 2019. So some of the shocking numbers actually with regards to China is that from 2012 to 2018, China actually was the country that, you know, delivered more than half of the global growth in luxury spend. So no matter how much it grew, from 2012 to 2018, China accounted for half of that growth. And they are expected, China as a country is expected to deliver 65% of the additional spend all the way to 2025, okay? And they will be about 40% of the world's spend. They will represent 40% of the world's spend in luxury by 2025. That's about, in terms of context, 1.2 trillion renminbi. But this is just a lot of money. Yeah.
So, can I ask you about, though, in that context, which is very interesting, is just a little description of the store, because again, in the West, there is always a tendency to think about scale. The old idea of opening more stores, and in many cases, depending on the kind of retailer you are, large stores. But as you focus very much on these kind of smaller convenience stores, and you've shown how there's a kind of new life for some of these normal stores in terms of fulfilling online orders. But is there a place for, you know, the huge hypermarkets or huge, like, shopping malls I'm thinking of as well, although be it smaller stores within. But, you know, what does that sector look like? Because obviously it's been on the decline in the West, and a number of shopping center companies have gone out of business in the UK. In the US, they're continuing to have a kind of crisis. And as you know, there is a YouTube video where you just look at empty shopping malls. It's kind of, it's absolutely fascinating and a little unsettling. Yes. And we're now talking about what the shopping mall of the future looks like. But actually, in Asia, it's a different perspective entirely.
It is. I tried looking into some numbers, and since we're still talking a little bit about China, then we expand out a little bit. I think based on one of the reports I saw, I don't have the 2019 figures or 2020 figures. Those will probably change. However, from 2016 to 2018, there is about an 11% year-on-year growth in terms of the number of shopping malls in China. Okay, and that's obviously before the whole economic slowdown, and definitely before this COVID situation. And the total amount for China, based on this report, I think it's also by McKinsey, 2018 wise, the count was 5,666 shopping malls. So I'm not so sure how they define shopping malls, but that's the count for you, 5,666. Well, I didn't take a check on the number of shopping malls in the US. However, I think there's been a very popular statistic or report. I believe it's compiled by A.T. Kearney Analysis and International Council of Shopping Centers. This report, I sometimes use it when I, you know, go to talk to retailers in my line of work to debunk the fact that retail apocalypse is coming in Asia. It's a pretty useful chart because it shows the square feet of retail per person by country. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this certain report, but the number that's highest there is USA. It stands at 23.5 square feet per person per capita. So that's 23.5, okay? The next in line was Canada. I can't remember the number, but I tried to pull out some of the other countries that were mentioned in this report. And the one on top for APAC really is Australia. It's at 11.2. It's actually third most over retail space country. And it stands at 11.2, and that's like half of US. And as you go down the chart, Japan is at about 4.4 square feet. China is only at 2.8 versus US of A. So that's like 10 times lesser. Okay. And as you go down the list, Thailand is at about 2.3 square feet per person. South Korea is close, 2.2. And Indonesia, the one that we just mentioned, is only at 1 square feet per person. So if you have this, if you look at these numbers in perspective, suddenly you realize there actually is a huge potential in terms of retail floor, retail space growth in Asia, if we are going to come to the level of US. And I forgot to mention that this report was actually in 2018, and this report sort of predicted, you know, the massive number of store closures and bankruptcies we witnessed in US throughout 2019. More is going to happen after we kind of come out of this COVID-19 situation. So the US number of 23.5 is probably going to come down a lot. And I'm looking forward to an update to this chart, really. And but from this perspective, pre-COVID, we know and understand why this whole retail apocalypse situation is happening in US with thousands of store closures. But in Asia, you know, it's probably a different perspective.
And you're not talking about, the other thing is, because I've seen you when you, on your travels when you're visiting stores, we're not talking about just a whole bunch of new stores that look exactly like all the other stores we've seen. You've been seeing some really interesting new formats in these in these shopping malls. I mean, can you give us a few ideas? Because clearly it's not just about volumes, but there's some real innovation there in terms of what the retailers are doing in some of these stores.
Yes, definitely, definitely. I think the most recent example that I showed was incidentally also in Indonesia, also an unmanned store. You know, when you think of unmanned store, you think about Amazon Go. So I've actually been to Amazon Go as well in one of my videos I featured, and there's actually a bit of a difference. So the one in Indonesia was actually by JD.com, Jingdong. They are the biggest retailer in the traditional definition in China. You know, a lot of people will say that's Alibaba, but that's not, because Alibaba is really more of a e-commerce platform provider. They're huge there. But in the traditional sense of retail, whereby you buy the store, you keep it, you store it, you ship it, Jingdong.com. So they came out with this unmanned store as well. I probably think it's experimental, but they have some of these already in China. And a lot of these innovations are also happening in China, right? Unmanned stores, using of AR, VR, AI to do a lot of these retail operations or to enhance the customer's experience. And really, you know, we go back to the word of omnichannel. It's how they are trying to attract more people to come, capture the customers. And there are a lot of other innovations in other parts of the world. Say, for example, in Singapore, we have this retailer called Love Bonito Women's Apparel. They started online, but they are going more and more into offline stores. And they have a store in a new mall in Singapore called Funan, where they had this nice space. And the way they are selling the women's clothing, it's really more of a lifestyle based community building, women empowering kind of a concept, whereby, you know, there are a lot of different digital interfaces where you can interface in store itself. Of course, you can buy online, offline, you can purchase online and pick it up in store, vice versa. And they actually have dedicated a space as well within the store where they can have regular talks about how to dress or any other, you know, issues to build that community. And they've been pretty successful, and they're expanding into other parts of the region, like in Hong Kong. So the question then is, if they are already successful online, why did they choose to adopt a physical store as well and expanding the number of branches? So my point being, there are a lot of innovations within Asia as well. But, you know, you can really see and feel the innovation in physical stores. So that is one area that I think, you know, is also one of the reasons why there will not be a shortage of physical stores popping out with innovations in Asia.
Yeah. So what we're really talking about now, what I'm picking up is that now we need to talk about the customer. They want convenience, they want to shop online, they want to shop in stores. Now, I know this is a particular area of interest for you, which is in terms of how to better understand these customers, particularly when they identify themselves online, as we know, but also how they do that in store. And there's, I guess I've been writing about this for nearly 10 years now, about how to identify customers in store and do it in the right way and gather enough information in order to determine what changes need to be made in terms of the layout in the store and the promotions and the marketing and so on and so on. And I kind of feel it's almost got to a point where there's a kind of fatigue, if you like. It feels like a fatigue amongst some retailers where they're thinking, look, there's just so many ideas, there's so much technology coming at me. I don't know whether you can kind of give us a perspective from where you are, because it sounds like in your countries that there is this willingness to innovate and willingness to open stores, but progressively those retailers are going to want to get a better understanding of who these customers are, because if they're serving them online as well, well, what's the right balance? How do I do the fulfillment? How do I do the returns? How do I serve them in store in a way that is profitable to me?
That's a huge question. You
it's
mentioned
a huge question.
Chris,
in fact, it's about five different questions. Jeremy.
you mentioned you've been writing. Okay, you mentioned you've been writing this for 10 years. Have you figured it out yet?
Well, the trouble is the same good ideas kind of keep coming round. And I do remember, you remember beacons was kind of
yes,
the
beacons
identifying customers. Yes. Well, nobody mentions the word beacons anymore. So
that's precisely the problem. Retail moves so fast. So I always tell people that retail as a whole is probably the easiest and yet the hardest industry to people, because it's the easiest because everyone's a consumer. So you can relate everything back to yourself, right? So it's easy to understand in that aspect. And it's the most difficult industry to understand also precisely because there are so many moving pieces. Consumers are fickle, so much technology. What is the right one for you? So really, I do not really know how to tackle this huge question, but based on some observations, or really, I'm just gonna go, touch here and there, everywhere. I'm gonna
great.
Be all over the place.
Sounds great.
Yeah, sounds good. But there are a lot of different trends that are happening. Let's pull back, to China for a moment as well. Okay, just at that. With all this new retail thing, I think really customers are looking for a few things. If we could generalize, not just even Chinese consumers, us as human, mankind as a whole, there are a few things that will appeal to us, right? Definitely low price, it's definitely one. Even better, it's for free. But then if it's for free, you might not even want it. So there lies in the irony of human behavior. So price would always be a huge deciding factor in this part of the world, as with most part, I guess. If you can solve the problem of convenience, not having bridge that time and space, you help them save time. You don't have to, they don't have to go to a certain place to get it. This is definitely, we're pampering our consumers a lot, but it's also the problem now because they want to be pampered. The internet age has brought on instant gratification as a huge selling point. So people want everything now fast, right now at the cheap price. So we need to solve those problems. And the moment we open up more different channels for them to go on to access goods and services at a cheap price immediately, and any time of the day, the better you're going to get, more business you're going to get. So there are all these challenges that inherent to what consumers want. But then we also look at the other spectrum of a certain type of humans who, we call the short form is FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Don't, sorry, that's one group. I'm talking about the JOMO group of people, joy of missing out people.
Right.
So that's the FOMO and the JOMOs. So essentially, there are really like two groups of people. But I guess in Asia's context, where there's a huge growth of middle class, rising incomes, there will always be this group of FOMOs, fear of missing out. They want to buy everything. They want to own everything as fast as they can, of high value, if not luxurious goods, so that it's a show off of their social status. So what's that implication to stores? In the olden days, when I was in China, 2004, 2013, the name of the game is, back then, it probably still is, but probably lesser impact now, location, location, location. I mean, you've heard that before, right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, back then in 2004, everyone was jogging for physical space. They are so busy expanding in China because of the high growth. They have no time, they don't want, or money to invest in technologies, all the different technologies that we have now, right? AR, VR, RFID, loss prevention, traffic, all these technologies, they're not interested. They're just interested in opening up more spaces to reach the customers. Because online wasn't that great back then. You know, internet connectivity, not everyone was on mobile. You definitely didn't have WeChat and all these apps. So that was a different time. But now, because of the change in the consumers' preferences or their impatience, a lot of all of this has been shortcut for them. Information is perfect. They know exactly, or they want to know exactly, where to get the best item closest to them at the fastest speed, at the cheapest price. Okay, so with that complexity, retail has to try to figure out which is the best way to reach them, what is the best product to offer, and how to get more people to buy of the same thing in the most convenient way for them. So this puts a lot of stress on the retailers, because suddenly they have to go online. And now with this COVID situation, they are forced to be online. Otherwise, there's no way to reach customers. Suddenly, logistics become an important part to play, has an important part to play in terms of reaching customers. And with this situation of the virus, even more so than before. So all these different dynamics come into play, and really retailers are looking into technology to help solve all these problems, right? So some of the technology that I'm probably more familiar with, you know, one of the things would be called traffic analytics. When do you know how many customers come to your store at which time of the day, which day of the week do they come in the most? How long do they stay there? How much do they spend? And all of this technology, with this traffic as an example, is really to help retailers better manage themselves so that they can better manage the expectations of the consumers.
And I'm assuming that on the other side of this crisis, after the kind of bin shopping has worn off, because clearly that doesn't last for too long, and we get to some kind of normal again, one of the predictions I've been making is that it will accelerate the journey that most retailers are on to adopt these kinds of techniques and technologies. Now, I appreciate that doesn't mean they've got a bottomless pit of money to pay for all of this, but I think they will accelerate. I don't know if you have a, you know, you take the
I'm rather the cautious on how things would be post COVID-19, because let's look at the situation in, say, three aspects, right? So earlier I talked a little bit about the consumer's attitude. So I'm not sure, you know, whether people are really going to, you know, be the FOMOs. They fear missing out. They want to buy everything they can because they realize they just come out of a lockdown and money is no good during a lockdown because they can't spend it. Sure, so they're just going to go out and revenge buy. All the things I wanted to buy in the past that I didn't buy, I'm going to buy them because life is short. I might get hit and die the next day, you know, coming out of a lockdown. I don't know. That could be one group of people. And I think that will represent a vast majority of consumers, be in China, be in the rest of Asia. I think that will be, because we are still very economic driven. Maybe materialism is picking up. But there's also another group, that the other group, the joy of missing out people, or people who have used this time during the lockdown to really consider what matters. No, the term essential retail, suddenly you realize, oh, these are essential. I didn't need the rest of the other stuff. And so that's one aspect. Plus, let's not forget that maybe a lot of these consumers have lost their jobs during this time. And coupled with the fact that they suddenly realize that, oh, these are essential. You don't need the rest of the other Gucci bags or whatever it is, Ferragamo shoes. That could have an impact. Okay, so I'm not sure how the split will be, but I'm betting that hopefully more will be on the let's spend all the money so that retail gets a kickstart on this recovery. The revenge buy comes in and that compensates for the declining shopping over the past few months, and economy gets back up, you know, the rest of APAC, and everyone has more jobs, good jobs, and the whole economic engine goes forth. That's what I hope for. Yeah, because everyone's impacted right now, and that's how economy works, right? And retail employs a lot of people who are probably jobless now. So that's the part I hope for. And the other part, so I don't know what portion of those who suddenly realize that, you know, those are essential, what's not. I don't know how big that group will be. However, I do think that even if there's this group, it's going to be a matter of time they go back to spending again because humans are forgetful. So you suddenly realize that, you know, for a while, oh, these are essentials, the rest are not essentials. But once you the economy improves, you want to buy more things and, you know, be better off. So I think it will be a temporary thing on the consumer end. Yeah, the other aspect I'm looking at that coming out of this really is the government side of things. The fact that it's called COVID-19 means that there'll be a COVID-21, there'll be a COVID-23. Hopefully not, but this thing has happened before, right? With MERS and SARS, it will come back. Just that, you know, we do not know when and we don't know how severe it will be and how it's mutated and how lethal it will be. So I think this entire COVID thing, because of this wide scale and how it has impacted everyone and how different governments are reacting to it, you might get governments who still want you to observe social distancing. And there comes things like occupancy. Like in Singapore, one of the social distancing measures is that, you know, the retail space must adhere to a one person per 16 square meters of retail space. So if you have a shopping center of X amount of retail space, you got to divide that by 16, and then you know how many people can be in the shopping mall at a single time. You know, I think Australia is observing something like that as well. So depending on how governments take power, once you come out of this, whether they're going to still impose social distancing, how their attitude towards possible future threats will be, is going to be a factor we need to consider, right? So that's one aspect we need to look at. So finally, the third aspect really will be the retail stores. And the biggest problem that retail stores have faced here currently is that they have no way to reach customers if they don't have an online component. So suddenly, physical stores that never had online before, they're probably going to die off, because unless they have a huge war chest of cash lying around somewhere and they survive this, you know, if they do survive, they're going to realize that online is important, right, versus offline. And then it comes to the question of how much they're going to invest online versus offline. If offline is going to be, physical store is going to perform a different, entirely different function versus online. For example, you know, like one of the stores I covered in my video, the physical store is strictly for a customer experience to learn about the product, touch and feel, to understand the product, to interact with the store associates. And you can't buy in store, the Yale Smart Shop. So you can only buy online. So to me, that's one revolutionary idea. And maybe coming out of this whole COVID situation, stores might rethink what their physical store is all about. It may not be for transactions. You know, it really may be just for that, for you to show, to touch and feel. And I've come across a similar kind of a store concept in Tokyo. This sister brand of Uniqlo under fast retailing called Gu. They have a huge floor of space and they have a lot of apparels on display. But you can't buy anything there. You can't pay for anything there. You can scan, you can test, try and fit. You like the design, you scan the code and you go home and buy it online. And then it will be, the fulfillment will be to you, sent to your place. So that's one way of looking at it, similar to the Yale Smart Shop. So coming out of this, retailers will have to make the decision to really understand what functions do they want the physical store to play versus the online one. Or they want, if they still want to stick to the traditional sense whereby, you know, we still do transactions in the offline store, so be it. But the role has to change because you need to offer more than just putting up your wares for sale. You know, that happened in, I don't know, 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. It's not going to work now because everyone's going into your store and they crave an experience, an interaction. Consumers know your product before they go there because they've seen it online. So what the role of the store associate is very important now. And your store's brand, what does it represent? Does it mean more than just, I'm selling you a shirt, I'm selling you a cup of coffee, or are you selling an experience, right? The best example I like to give is Starbucks, right? People say, yeah, Starbucks is a coffee company. No, that's not true. They are and have always been selling the third space, the space between your home and your office. That's the third space. Starbucks is selling space. They're not selling coffee, right? So that's why they're able to charge so much for a coffee. And you're willing to pay because you know you're not paying for a coffee, you're paying for a meeting place to meet your friends, to socialize. So all these dynamics will come into play, and retail stores coming out of this situation would have to decide what they should invest in and why are they investing a certain portion online versus offline. And I want to touch a little bit on the importance of store associates. Even before this COVID situation, there's already a change, right? Because how consumers, all of them get online, they know all the information they need about the product. Suddenly, the store person, the store associate sort of becomes redundant. Or at the very least, you need to know your product or your offering much better than the consumer. Because the moment you cannot answer something that the consumer, or sometimes you call them prosumers, right? Pro-consumers. If you can't answer the prosumer certain questions, they're going to discount your store person and your brand, because your store person represents the brand. That this is not a brand, you know, they don't know their stuff. They don't even know their stuff. I know their stuff better than them. And that's going to cause some loss in loyalty, and you know, the entire customer experience is going to go down. So other than being very important as a store ambassador, what I've just said is really the flip side. But if it's the positive side, you have a very good store associate that can really turn things around. How so? Because you are able to represent your brand much better. You're going to be able to provide a very different store experience, a very different customer experience. And that's going to change the entire perception of the customer, because that will be the key touch point for any customer coming into your physical store. And that kind of a touch point, the human interaction part, is not available online. So your physical store's biggest differentiator, honestly, actually, is your store person, your store associate. And that's where you have to really invest in their training, or they have to really be passionate about your brand such that they can speak for you and you can feel their passion. So those are really quite different ways of deploying technology such that it enhances the customer experience. And those would really be the reasons why people will go to physical stores versus online.
We've talked about the differences in your region and various countries, but It sounds like at some point we will all arrive at the same place where for each country and for each region, there will be a recognition or an understanding, if you like, of what is the right mix of stores and online, what is the function of the store within a multi-channel retail environment, the right mix of technologies, the right kind of training for store associates.
Yes.
So I think it's important for people to, if you like, monitor that journey. But based on what you've been saying, Jeremy, recognizing how different it is in your region and how that journey might be different as people go, is that reasonable?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a reasonable general conclusion. But if we look at the, you know, as we started the call with the diversity in terms of how Asia is, all the entire different dynamics of economics, demographics, and all that, and not forgetting different sectors and segments within retail, there's just too many variables. But I think you're right. There will come a point whereby there is a certain type of norm and that consumers expect out of retailers, and retailers will have to deliver that. But that norm is really, it's going to be different for different countries, and different countries are going to arrive at that norm at different times, and that time will also be different for different parts of retail.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's exactly what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, exactly. But I want to thank you for your perspective, absolutely fascinating. I hope that I always have enough modesty to recognize that whilst I think I know a fair bit about retail, I only had to spend kind of 20 minutes with you on the line to realize that there's still an enormous amount that I still don't know. And I want to thank you for sharing it with our listeners today.
Thanks for inviting me in this.
Thanks again, Jeremy. And I hope we talk again soon.
I hope to see you soon, physically, at some store somewhere.
Indeed. Well, we look forward to that. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.